Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Today is Tuesday, February 14th of 2012, and welcome to the inaugural broadcast of Pro Action, kindly hosted over at blogtalkradio.com, hereafter referred to as BTR. If you would like to learn more about us, feel free to visit our website over at www.newcolonymedia.com. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening music was Wasin's Millennia, and the ending song will be Ritz 190's That Which Speaks Victory, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NC SA 3.0 Unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by New Colony Media, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. Pro Action. It's for anyone who has ever asked, what can I do? We will discuss positive projects that are helping individuals in their communities. Such interviews with self-motivated and productive leaders will also remove the ability of other people to complain about the problems we face by proclaiming an inability to do anything about it. Your host, Amelia Foxwell, is a student, a writer for Human Events, and a member of the Florida Charter Oaks Militia. Mrs. Foxwell is working with many around the country on developing problem-solving strategies based on empowerment and personal responsibility for successfully handling the shit we are currently in. Since she is currently on assignment, sitting in for Amelia for tonight's broadcast is the host of the Last Bastille podcast, which is also by New Colony Media, that airs on Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. Please keep in mind that there is a lot of essential material to cover tonight, so if you want to call in, Please wait and we will notify you when we are ready to take calls. However, the chat room should be available all throughout this broadcast. Also, it is imperative that any questions be constructive and on topic as much as possible. Believe me, although it is hard to not get off on tangents, staying on tonight's subject will be much appreciated, especially for the sake of the listening audience. This episode, we are going to focus on committees of safety. The historical significance of committees of safety arguably surpassed that of the more commonly known committees of correspondence, since the former was the means by which a relatively peaceful change of government occurred during and after the Revolutionary War. We will also be discussing the Arizona Committee of Safety, which has formed and is actively creating an infrastructure so that if the time ever arises where the committee needs to take the reins to protect the community, then the plans, personnel, and materiel will already be prepared to do so. Our guest tonight is the well-renowned constitutional scholar and all-around Renaissance man, Gary Hunt. Gary, are you with us? All right. Well, we will try and bring Gary Hunt on with us momentarily. In the meantime, it should be mentioned that we will be taking calls a little bit later in. We will notify you all when we are doing that. And so let us try to bring Gary Hunt on. Gary, are you with us? All right, let's try one more time. All right, Gary. All right, just a moment, folks. We are trying to kind of work the board, so to speak, but that's not too bad. It is very interesting to note, too, that committees of safety are very, very important as an organizational apparatus. It is very key to understanding, it is very key to understanding the, look at the founding fathers. Look at the, how important it is for them to really organize the colonists and get them into action. And folks, it looks like we are having some temporary difficulties, so we will play a little bit of music, sit back, lay back, and we will be bringing our guest on shortly. And I think we have probably solved our technical difficulties. Gary, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Sleepy, or is it Mr. Salsa?
I guess it's whatever you please.
I wouldn't go that far. That's dangerous.
Well, Gary Hunt, I guess we should start off by asking, what exactly is a Committee of Safety?
Something that's been omitted from history. What happened when I returned from Waco, I was curious how the Founding Fathers managed to organize something against the oppression that was occurring to them back there, the theft of guns from Concord, among other things, many other things. And so I started doing some reading, and I ran across this phrase, Committee of Safety. Now, I seem to have recalled them vaguely from the past. In fact, the Johnny Tremaine movie by Disney talked about them more in the original version, and that's since been, part of that's been edited out. But as I studied them, I realized that they were the infrastructure that that held the colonies together throughout the entire Revolution and all the way to the Articles of Confederation in 1781 when they were ratified. And then over the years, I've looked further and further into it, and right now I've traced them back to the time of Cromwell, the 16th century, in England, So they've got a long history in our heritage, and I've been continued to study since then. But what they were initially, and the basic element is within a town or a plantation or a city, they were the executive for that community. They would come together, elect officers, and those officers then were like the mayor or the governor or something like that. They were the ones that carried out the will of the people. They did a degree of legislative work during the Revolutionary War, primarily dealing with how to deal with Tories, how to raise funds, things like that, only what was necessary. They grew then within a colony, for example. They would, when there are enough committees of safety, they established a state committee of safety, which went under other names earlier on. For example, in Massachusetts, it was called the Provincial Congress, but later converted to the Massachusetts Committee of Safety. And they were the elements that called together the First Continental Congress, the committees of safety through the provincial congresses in New York and Massachusetts actually called for the First Continental Congress in 1774. So their history is embedded in our history, and we've just lost sight of them, and it's an endeavor to try and bring that out that has occupied my time for the last 18 years.
Well, what exactly is the primary function of a committee of safety?
Well, we have a right of collective self-defense. We understand the concept of militia, but we also understand that the militia has to be subordinate to a civil authority, as do the courts. In Worcester, Massachusetts, in 1774, for example, I think it was in May of 1774, they declared war against, or declared independence from Great Britain. They discharged all the militia, then they re-enrolled those that weren't Tories, they recommissioned officers that weren't Tories, and they established a court under the authority of the people. Now, under the exigent circumstances of the time, there was no higher power. Today, the courts are created by the state government or the federal government by virtue of the constitutions, but back then there was no way to establish a court or provide that civil body the militia had to be obedient to. Except for the people themselves to, as a body, collectively say, here's our militia and here's our court. So their function acted in the capacity of the local government for the purpose of collective self-defense and protection and safety. In fact, some of the other functions that they did during the siege of Boston by the British, as far away as Connecticut and New York, they were shipping firewood, food, and clothing and blankets to Boston because Boston had been embargoed, and the British were tearing down fences for firewood, so the local people had no firewood during the winter, and so this was being shipped across Boston Neck in wagons by the committees of safety. So their function was to fill in where the need arose, wherever the need arose. In the frontier regions, in the Mohawk Valley and the Pennsylvania area where the Indians were a threat, the committees of safety, because the colonial government would not provide protection against the Indians, the committees of safety would form. They would build a stockade. They would have watchmen who would, if signs of Indian attack were apparent, then they would notify everybody who would come to the stockade and collectively defend themselves. So their functions were whatever was necessary, whatever had to be done and was not being done by the existing government.
What is the history or the development of the committees of safety in our country?
Well, the earliest I've found was 1692 or thereabouts. New England had a governor, Andros, and he was despotic, and he kept raising the quit rents, what people had to pay to live on the land that they were living on. And so the militia, who was under the governor, Andros, realized that they worked for the governor. They had to have an alternative, so they called for a committee of safety to be established. That committee of safety was established. It directed the militia to arrest Andros. Andros was held in jail until he returned to England. Now, a few years later, he came back, but I'm sure he was much more humble when he came back later on. The next occurrence that I find in our history is, as I mentioned, the Mohawk Valley and the wildernesses of Pennsylvania. Then obviously during the Revolutionary War, the committees of safety were the mainstay. They kept civil government alive and active and avoided chaos that would come from the absence of civil authority throughout the entire Revolutionary War period. Next, at least in the South, there were committees of safety during the Civil War, and what they did is they established home defense. Most of the young men, or the healthy men, were conscripted in the Confederate Army. And so the younger men, the older men, and the crippled men, or anybody who could not go fight with the Confederate Army, was mustered into militias for home defense against Union intrusions. Next occurrence that I'm aware of came about the time that Texas decided it didn't like those in Mexico telling Santana telling them what to do. So their committees of safety sent delegates to, and I don't remember the town, but at that point they started creating the government that became the Republic of Texas. Their militias were assigned their responsibilities under that government. Next occurrence was California in the short period between the Mexicans getting kicked out, about a year and a half, where there were a lot of battles in California between the Mexicans and the militia controlled by the committees of safety until statehood, and or until California formed a government for the purpose of statehood, I should say. And then the next occurrence, surprisingly, occurred just last year in Rock Springs, Arizona, when a committee of safety was formed that was modeled very much like those historical committees of safety that we can read about in history.
Can you describe what's been going on in Arizona as far as the formation of a committee of safety goes?
Well, Arizona, some of the people there, this evolved out of what was happening in Quartzsite last year. I think most people are familiar with Quartzsite, where most of the police officers were fired. The mayor was told he had to attend a meeting in one case, and in other cases he was denied entry to the meeting. There was little chaos in city government. A lot of patriots, including Sons of Liberty Riders, Oath Keepers, and some of so-called militia, and just people, Tea Party people and everything, went to Quartzsite just to demonstrate against the abuse of power that was being carried out by city government. And time has shown that they were, for the most part, correct, and possibly everything that they were objecting to will eventually be shown to that they were correct, the people that demonstrated and the people on their side against the city government. But kind of as a result of that, I got to talking to some people in Arizona, one in particular, I can't call him a gentleman. He's too crusty for that. A guy named Mike Fry. He was the interim chairman of the Arizona Committee of Safety, and now he's the first full-term chairman of the Committee of Safety. His term will be 1 year. But we got talking, and so he started asking me questions about Committee of Safety, and so I started explaining to him. Now, he and Wendy Shops from Sons of Liberty Rider are the two key, and Jeff, her husband, are the three key people in forming the Arizona Committee of Safety. But he said, can we form a state committee of safety instead of a local committee of safety? And I got to thinking, I'd not thought about that before, but I realized that right on the front page of the committee of safety page at committee.org is a handbill from April 12, 1775, when John Hancock, chairman of the Massachusetts Provincial Committee Congress, asked all towns, plantations, to form committees of safety. So, yes, I guess you could start it at the state level. Does it have any teeth at the state level? Yes and no. And as the program progresses, we'll get into that. But so they decided they're going to start at the state level, and they're going to establish the committee of safety. As I say, it has no teeth. It cannot direct militias around. In fact, there are no state militias. They're in the colonial times, there were no state militias. They were all local militias. They were assigned to the state and given their marching orders by the state. But to carry out the functions of a committee of safety and encourage counties then to create committees of safety, and as the counties come into the create committees of safety, they'll send delegates to the state committee of safety, and those delegates then become the teeth in the state committee of safety. Back in December, I think December 2nd, they adopted bylaws and subscribed a number of members. If I remember correctly, it was 22 members. They took an oath of secrecy, and this can be we'll probably get into explaining what all these are a little later on, and actually formed the first committee of safety that's existed in this country since California became a state. The first one modeled after historical examples of committee of safety. And they have been encouraging county committees of safety in Arizona, and there are at least five counties. One that I know that's actively pursuing establishing a committee of safety is Mojave County. I understand, and I've spoken with them a number of times, but La Paz County, where Quartzsite is considering a committee of safety now. Maricopa County, Phoenix area, is considering a committee of safety. Yuma County is considering a committee of safety, and I think Pima County is the other one that right now are actively working towards establishing these committees of safety.
Well, that sounds like good news. What are the main functions that the people of Arizona are hoping their committee of safety will perform?
Okay, now we'll get into some detail. When they established the committee of safety, we didn't have a lot of direction. Back in the 90s, we created some committees of safety, and we set up subcommittees, one for history, one for communication, for various functions, but they didn't have a whole lot of purpose. And I'm going to do a book report. There's a book called The Minutemen by John Galvin. It was published in 2010, and it's a fascinating book because it gave me a little more insight. What happened on April 19th, 1775 was anticipated by the people and the farmers in western Massachusetts, not the people in Boston, but the farmers in western Massachusetts. There's an article on my blog, The End of the Revolution, Beginning of Independence, that addresses some of what was going on in western Massachusetts, but this book clarifies something that is very significant. They had begun getting organized, developing communications between the counties, establishing the rules for the militia, determining on how they were going to pay the militia. They were setting up this structure, this military structure, command, and command always evolved on the county committee of safety, evolved through the county committee of safety. The Minutemen were the ones that could respond more rapidly, but on that day, it seems that the people that weren't even Minutemen were able to respond quite rapidly. But something that demonstrates the obedience to the Committee of Safety was one of the town committees wanted to go to Concord when they heard what was happening. So they sent a rider to the county seat, and he went to the county seat. He had to track down somebody of authority in the county committee of safety and get permission and then ride back. So 7 hours after he left for the county seat and returned, he brought back permission for them to leave their county to go to Concord to shoot redcoats. Trouble was, they'd left Concord by then, so these guys ended up fighting along Battle Road. But that's how coordinated it was. Now, what they had was an infrastructure in place. They had everything worked out. All the details were worked out on how they were going to respond if ever the anticipated attacks on their rights as Englishmen occurred by the British soldiers, which they did on April 19th. And the British soldiers were going to take the guns away from the people in Concord. And so the threat that they feared, the taking of their guns at Concord, was the activity that brought this infrastructure into active into activity. It made this planning functional, and the planning was so good that the response brought thousands of men down to shoot on the British. So now back to Arizona. For instance, there's a militia subcommittee, and they came up with their initial report about 2 weeks ago. And this is an idea what they're going to do. They're going to create an infrastructure, at least with regard to the militia, what I just mentioned about Western Massachusetts. They're going to create that infrastructure. It's going to have training. It's going to have a degree of communication, intercommunication between militia, at least. It's going to have a command structure that looks at the geography of the state and divides it into divisions, at least four, probably perhaps more, based on the geography and accessibility. So they're going to design this infrastructure like they did back in Massachusetts. But here's their initial report, planning. The militia subcommittee will prepare plans for the incorporation of militia units under a county committee of safety once a county committee of safety is recognized by the Arizona Committee of Safety, and a cooperative militia unit within that county can be identified. Now, when I say cooperative militia unit, that's a rather interesting phrase, I guess. What they're looking for is, let's just say Mojave County has a militia and forms a committee of safety. There's still no relationship with the two. In fact, I think many people have heard me say there is no constitutional militia in this country today, and the reason there is none have established a relationship, a subordination to a civil authority. And so when we find a militia that's willing to go through the steps that we're defining, then they will become the first constitutional militia because they will be subordinate ultimately to that committee of safety, perhaps to the governor or the county as well, but also to create ties to the committee of safety should the need ever arise. Now, there's been a plan worked out between a few of us to assist the militia into forming as a constitutional militia, but we're keeping the details of that plan confidential now. And the reason, quite simply, is if we laid that on the table now, somebody might take that and say, oh, I can do that without the thought required, and go out and screw up the whole process and make it more difficult to achieve it. There are a number of steps that will be gone through to establish the constitutionality of that militia. Now, they're also going to develop a command liaison structure and a communication structure that will allow county committees and the ACOS to communicate, and it will incorporate the following objectives: the relationship of the Arizona Committee of Safety Subcommittee with the county militia subcommittees, proposed command structure that provides sub-county, county, regional relationships. The regional relationship should consider geography and may require, in some counties, assignment of geographically isolated units in appropriate regional units. So a county might be divided because of topography, where half the county, say, up in the mountainous region, works with other committees, while the ones down on the desert floor of the valley work with other units, even though they're within the same county. The command structure will be based on the geography at the division level. Recommend a table of officers, rank, and unit command structure, which... I'll get back to that in a minute. They're going to design a training procedure for militia units, and it's going to be cycle-based. And except for a preliminary cycle, which everybody would have to go to enter the cycle then, if they have 8 weekend cycles, you can jump in at any time, but you'll have to complete all 8 of the cycles with passing grades before you are enrolled in the militia, so that there was the fundamental or basic training requirements will be established for anybody to participate in the militia. Now, in talking with Mike Fry, Sheriff Babeau, and some other sheriffs down there would appreciate assistance from militias that have had certain training. So this training routine, which is being designed by Tim Guinea, Arizona State Guard LLC, primarily. I mean, there's other people inputting into it, but he's the one that's been given the responsibility of coming up with this training manual, will be approved by the sheriffs or acceptable to the sheriffs as a training cycle that will allow them to participate with existing law enforcement in border protection or different events. And again, this will be a first, really, where the working relationship is an agreeable one, not just an acceptable one, between existing law enforcement, the county sheriff, and militia units. They will also establish some officer training to teach. I know everybody thinks they'd be a good officer, but just like the military has the officer candidate school or different methods of training officers, they're going to develop an officer training program. So now back down to the units. A squad, this is a general command relationship to unit and unit size that is the foundation. It's not fixed, but a squad is 8 to 16 men. The command in that squad is a corporal or a sergeant. A platoon is 25 to 60 men, and that's a lieutenant and a staff sergeant, the command structure. Now, four, five, six squads could be a platoon, but once you got to six squads, they'd probably break off and become two platoons. And so they're going to define the structure at what point we break and create a platoon out of the squads. I mean, there will be one platoon, even if there's only one squad, but as it grows, at what point do we break and begin this command structure? Company is 70 to 250 men, generally four or five companies, so it too, by the time you get the fifth or sixth platoon, you break off and you have two companies, and the command in the company is a captain and a first sergeant. Then we get to the battalion level. Now, again, four or five companies. At some point, you break off and create a battalion. Now, everything below battalion, the officers will probably, the NCOs will be appointed by the officers in charge of the platoon or the company. The officers will probably be elected and then commissioned by the Committee of Safety, because all non-commissioned officers are sergeants. Commissioned officers have a commission. From colonial times to the present day, officers have to have a commission from that civil body. Now, that commission, interestingly, is the contract of obedience to the civil authority. Congress commissions all the officers in the United States military. I'm not sure if they do warrant officers, but second lieutenant, first lieutenant, captain, major, all the way up the chain, they're all commissioned by Congress. Congress can revoke those commissions as well. So the commissions will be based on an election down at the company level. At the battalion level now we're getting into the county, looking at the company captains, the company commanders, and evaluating these people for their qualifications and determining who would best suit the major assignment in charge as battalion commander. And that's 300 to 1,000 men, and that's a major, and a sergeant major is the command structure. The regiment, the next level up, a colonel and staff, the brigade, brigadier general and staff, and then the division, major general and staff, corps, lieutenant general and staff, army general and staff. So this general military structure is going to be adhered to, but it's going to be revised to meet the needs of the command structure under the authority of the Arizona Committee of Safety for operational purposes. That's exactly what they did back in 1774 to be prepared for 1775. They had everything in line. The infrastructure was in place. Now, infrastructure, for those that aren't familiar with the term, if there's a new subdivision, I'm a surveyor, so I'm going to use my vocation or my profession as for the example, but if I'm going to build a subdivision, I don't go out and build houses, call them militia units, haphazardly through the area and say, okay, go live in your house, we'll get you some roads later. You go in first, you build the road, you design it, you build the roads, you put the water, the sewer, the electric, and the telephone in, then you start building houses. Well, the road, the sewer, the water, the stormwater system, the electric, and the telephone is the infrastructure. So what we're going to do is create that infrastructure so then that when we are ready to build houses, the infrastructure is there, and the house goes in place, and everything's in working order the moment the house is in place. So rather than sit around and talk, these people are going to design a manual that can be handed down and around. And if any of them are lost, then somebody next in command takes the manual, and he has a complete understanding of the infrastructure and how this whole thing is operational. So it doesn't seem productive in many respects, but it doesn't seem very productive until the first house goes in the subdivision. But if the roads are in place, you realize that productivity. So rather than sitting around and talking, they're going to be doing things in the militia subcommittee. They're going to be, and I mentioned Tim Guinea, and he's going to be preparing the training manual that will be distributed on request to any militia unit through its county committee of safety. There are more things that they've talked about that haven't committed to paper yet, but the committees are meeting every other week. The subcommittees, some of the subcommittees, and the other, and the committee is meeting every other week this time. They're on a roll to create this infrastructure. Now, there are a lot of committees of safety in this country today. They call themselves committees of safety. They have meetings, they support candidates, they do this and they do that. But really, I have yet to see one that has done anything productive, anything that would be of benefit, activity that would be of benefit to the future. But here in Arizona, they are actually creating something. It is productive. It's not just sitting around talking, drinking beer, and laughing and joking. These people are serious. They recognize, and somebody mentioned on a comment somewhere the other day that Arizona is probably the best state in the union to consider the need for a committee of safety based on this type of formula because of the problems they have with the border and the very real potential that if things fall apart in this country, that an invasion could come across that border, and that's the best border to come across. Texas has the Rio Grande, difficult crossing. New Mexico has very little contact with Mexico, and California has very little, and it's pretty nasty desert if you've ever been between Yuma and San Diego. So Arizona is the ideal place to expect that a land invasion might occur. So the threat is perhaps as real as it was, say, in 1772 or 1773, that something might happen here. And so that's being considered in them preparing this infrastructure as well. So they're incorporating in this command, they're even looking at defensibility of once you get out of the desert and start getting to the mountains of Arizona, how do we defend these mountains? Something they call the horseshoe. And it's a rather interesting concept. We've had a lot of discussion about it. But when if something happens, and I think most of us expect that sooner or later something will happen, the plan will be in place. If, as I expect, when the government comes down on us, they're going to go out and take out the leadership in the Patriot community by having these manuals available to everybody, it won't matter. Somebody else can easily step up to the home plate, pick up the bat, and play ball because the manual's there and everything's in place. It's not just in somebody's mind. It's not a very fluid, let's do this week, let's do that next week. And that's the beauty of what they're doing in Arizona. Now, as the militia subcommittees come on at the county level, then they will be working very closely with the subcommittee at the state level in coordinating these efforts, having their input, perhaps bringing better ideas to incorporate into the manual. And just in the militia subcommittee, they have created a phenomenal foundation in preparation for the eventuality that almost anybody listening to this program, except those that get paid by the government, might consider to be a real threat to this country. They will be prepared for it. The intelligence subcommittee will be working. They've got to develop their goals first before they start working on them. And don't get me wrong, too, as far as the militia subcommittee, there's a lot more work they have to do, but they're focusing on these points that I've mentioned to get them done before they go on, because if you've got too many things to do, you kind of get lost in the forest. So there's such a small cluster here of things that have to be done. As they get done, then they'll add more duties, but they will keep busy all the way through, and they're enthused about it because they are, as I said, they are creating something. So the intelligence subcommittee is going to start working on perhaps making dossiers on all of the higher level people in the Committee of Safety, more as a training exercise than anything, but to assure that these people have good records. They will develop their method of evaluation of new people, what's going to be required. They will develop a means of working with other intelligence subcommittees in there, at the county level and within other states to share information as, say, questionable people enter the Patriot community. And so they start playing a very important role in terms of security. They can also develop methods of, I don't want to use messaging because that word's kind of gone in a different direction, but let's say encryption or coding messaging between units, coming up with means. So if they wanted to communicate with another intelligence unit, they might encrypt, hand over to degree of safety, hand over to communication this encrypted message, and then the communication might re-encrypt it to send it somewhere else, and it'd be decrypted, go back to the intelligence committee on the other end, and be decrypted. They've got to work out these communications of secure communications. They've also got to look about at the practicality of the various communications available, and that would include internet, email, telephone or Skype, CB radios, and even couriers, setting up a network where couriers can, a network of couriers so people can expeditiously travel the distance to pass messages on if the security of the message or the circumstances in the area require it. So they're going to start building this manual on how to deal with all these things. Let's plan it out now so that when we get a flat tire, we got a spare tire, we slap it on the car, and we're back on the road. Communication, then, is going to develop and work on perfecting the methods of communications in those areas I mentioned, from the internet all the way down to the courier. And they'll be working hand-in-hand with intelligence because how the package for the message will basically be the purview of the Intelligence Department. The method of transferring that package will be the purview of communication, but they have to work together to make sure that there's not... What was that Mars lander that they had metric bolts and English measurement bolts, and the thing was supposed to have fallen apart because of that? That was the excuse anyway. We don't want that to happen, so the work between these two will be there. Now, the communication committee then comes into play also in working very closely with the militia subcommittee. The militia subcommittee is going to have to communicate. They've got a command structure, but they've got to establish communications. That communication, again, they will prepare the messages. They will go to the post office, the communication subcommittee, who will transmit the message and assure delivery on the other side, confirmation, whatever is necessary. So now we've got, and now the Intelligence Committee, too, will also do dossiers on any officers in the militia committee. So we've got three committees that have commingling responsibilities. They have to coordinate with each other. So working out that method of coordination now becomes an element in developing this infrastructure. And from what I've seen, I have full faith in these people's ability. I would think that within 4 to 6 months, they're going to have manuals dealing with all of this stuff. Their enthusiasm for this and their concern over what's happening in the country is the motivation that will bring all this into place in a very short period of time. They are also the model. I've jokingly called them the Massachusetts of the Second American Revolution. I don't think we're going to have a revolution. We're going to have a restoration of constitutional government. But they have become the Massachusetts. They've become the crux of this because of their relationship with Mexico is not very much different than Boston's was with England. You know, it was adversarial. So hopefully there'll be a model, and as we learn from that, all that information will be shared with any committee of safety who comes on along the concept of committee of safety that's being developed in Arizona, one that's got the structure between the county and the state, recognizes the obedience necessary of militia, these other elements that don't seem to fit in some of the committees of safety that I read about on the internet. So they've become the model, but now the Arizona Committee of Safety at their next meeting is going to designate somebody as liaison to the other committees of safety that are forming now. And I got to tell you, in the last week, five different places around the country have contacted me. They've heard about Arizona Committee of Safety. They're enthused, and I know some of them are listening right now. They're enthused, and they want to set up their committees of safety along the line of what they're doing in Arizona. Now, nothing's fixed and hard. I mean, each unit, each county, each state has to develop what it thinks is best, but there's got to be that commonality and that interrelationship, and that's the only thing that's necessary. But they're listening now, and I'd like to think that they'll have committee safety formed at least in three or four of those five by the end of March.
Right, and
this liaison designee will work with them as much as is necessary to help them model theirs after the Arizona Committee of Safety to the extent that they want to. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of us are looking forward to that manual, absolutely. Listen, what are some of the obstacles that the Arizona Committee of Safety has faced thus far?
Well, one of the obstacles we've faced so far is Arizona is not a small state. You know, you could fit a bunch of Connecticuts or Rhode Islands in it. And so travel is one. I mean, the obstacles are really technological, what we're trying to do there, too. And I'm going to say like they do on television. I'm glad you asked that question because I overlooked something. We have set it up so that people can Skype in. We're trying to work out the bugs on it. We've got some people that can't Skype in because their connection or their computer can't handle Skype. So, but first, there's an Arizona Committee of Safety Skype name, and it's only for members, subscribers of the Arizona Committee of Safety. But it was set up with the premium so that everybody could watch the meetings. Next problem we had was people communicating in when they had deficient equipment or connection. And so they're going to get an online number so these people can call in and at least listen in on the meeting. And see, as far as I'm concerned, that's the only obstacle we've had so far. The cooperation among the people otherwise has been great. So this, just like getting the show started tonight, this technological, let's say, virtual meeting participation has been the only obstacle we have had, and we're sorting that out right now. When I say we, I will point out that I live in California, and the Arizona Committee of Safety saw fit, and boy, do I appreciate it. They made me – the Arizona Committee of Safety is limited to lawful inhabitants of Arizona. However, they unanimously voted me in as an honorary member, and I feel greatly honored by them doing that. So when I say we, I am a member of the Arizona Committee of Safety subscriber, even though I'm not in Arizona. But the only obstacles we faced are that. Now, we have sorted out the direction, and that was probably, I guess you could see that as an obstacle, but once you're past the obstacle, you have to look back and you don't really see it. We don't want to sit on our hands and just talk. We want to do something. So it's evolved in just these few months. It's evolved to the point that we've actually got goals that are productive, will produce something that is historically significant, or perhaps someday will be, is functional, and is a groundwork to be able to respond in true Minuteman style, should the need ever arise to respond in a Minuteman style.
Right. How did the members actually begin the process of starting a committee of safety?
Well, again, this is modeled after historical. The webpage for committee.org, http://www.committee.org, just down a little ways from the top of the page, you'll see information about committees of safety, and it's a zip file. If you download that zip file, you'll get a lot of information. And it's in a zip file because there's a lot of it. But in that, there are a subscriber and a secrecy oath and an application to be a subscriber that we used back in 1995 in Central Florida and South Bend, Indiana, 95 or 96. I guess. But first they decided that they were going to form a committee of safety, and so some bylaws were submitted. Now, a friend of mine did some research for me a while back. I will say it wasn't extensive research, but he went on the internet and he started looking for organizations and looking to see if anybody had bylaws that wasn't a corporation. And he found that the only time there were bylaws were if they were incorporated, and otherwise they had rules like you can't use racist language and you can't advocate violence. Those aren't really rules. Those are guidelines. But the Arizona Committee of Safety has established some bylaws, how to discipline people, what their structure is, and they're going to be adding to this as time goes on because we're building from scratch. But they established first the bylaws, and once they were established, it had a method for membership. And that membership that requires, one, that you submit an application for membership to become a subscriber. Now, subscriber is a term that was used back in the 1700s. Once you're accepted, then you sign the subscription agreement. And these are Arizona's will be up on their page in the near future. But a model, what it was modeled on, is available in that file I mentioned. They signed the subscription roll, and then Arizona opted that not just the executive board, but all the members of the Arizona Committee of Safety take a secrecy oath. Well, why would you want to take a secrecy oath? Well, why would you take a non-compete agreement contract with the corporation? It's just, it puts you on the spot to not divulge anything you shouldn't divulge out of the meeting. It keeps people from getting outlandish and speaking for something they have no right to speak for. But they opted to include that secrecy oath. So once you did the subscription role in the secrecy oath, you were a member of the Arizona Committee of Safety. They started out with, I think it was 22 members, and after a month they were up to 30 members. That's about a 32% increase. And this past month, they haven't gone the month yet, but they've already got 5 or 6 new subscribers. So now they're looking at an increase in 20% in this next month. And if they keep that growth rate going, they're going to be quite large. But that's the process. They established the bylaws. They established how they are going to accept people into the organization. They also, as I said, there's in the bylaws, it has what do you do with people that come into the – it's open to any lawful resident. So what do you do if somebody comes in and create a problem? And I hate to – I'll say it, but already there's been one disciplinary action that resulted in a vote of censure. However, the fellow chose to resign, and he is no longer a member of the Arizona Committee of Safety, nor will he ever be, as I understand it, because he's given up his right to participate by virtue of his resignation. The censure would have put him on notice for 6 months not to commit any activities that were in violation of the bylaws for the next 6 months, and then the censure would have gone away and he would have been back in good standing. So even the structure is there to remove people peacefully, not a pissing contest, but by a structured evaluation of the evidence and a determination by the General Association that, no, we don't need this guy in here, or yes, he should be censured for a period of time. So that's all it took to get it together. And that model, the information will be made available to anybody interested in setting a committee of safety. As I said, there are a lot of people interested. I've given them some of the information that we have. It might not be current. For example, the proposed bylaws for the state level and the proposed bylaws for the county level committees of safety have gone out to anybody who's requested them at this point. So that's how you start a committee of safety.
All right. Now, can you explain the best way, in your opinion, on how it is possible for someone to start their own committee of safety in their own local area?
Well, the first thing to do would be, and as I've recommended these five people I'm talking about, or five groups of people that I'm talking about, the first step is to go to committee.org and download that zip file and look through some of the information. Some of it's older, some of it's voluminous. There are two large volumes that we wrote back in the 90s when we didn't have near as much knowledge. And so the structure that's provided in them is what we thought 15 years ago, not what we think now. My studies have not ceased since then, but understand those two committees of safety booklets are extensive. They have a lot of documents, and they give you a good idea of what committees, how they operated back in the 1700s, but they're not to be relied upon as far as current structure or anything else. There's also the best article on the missing 13th Amendment that I've ever seen included in that package for those that want to recognize that the Titles of Nobility Amendment was ratified, as all the states did back until about 1850. Then there's some other documents and articles, Introduction to Committee of Safety. Back in the 90s, we were talking mostly militia. Let me go back here. We have a gun shoot committee, subcommittee. They've already planned the first gun shoot for March. My understanding is they're going to start planning gun shoots, hopefully in different areas around the state, as an enticement for people to join the Committee of Safety. Come to our gun shoot, and while you're out there, read this about committees of safety. There's a membership committee that's working on methods of expanding this membership. There's been no real effort on expanding the membership. It's just been word of mouth at this time. There's a Ways and Means subcommittee that's going to look at fundraising, because there are costs associated with this. So there are things outside of the periphery of what I talked about. But these manuals, you'll find one that's Introduction to Committees of Safety. That's been brought forward. That's dealing not with militias as we did in the 90s. It's dealing with what happens if Katrina hits your town and FEMA's only 6 months away. Bring your community together. Lean over the back fence. Talk to your neighbor. Join in the Committee of Safety. Little old lady needs her lawn mowed. Little old man needs his house painted. If they join the Committee of Safety as the General Association, you find some volunteers to go paint their house and mow the lawn. Start creating a community that's friendly. We all know historically that this used to be a very friendly country, and something happened over the years in my lifetime, because when I was a kid, everybody knew everybody in the neighborhood, parents and children. And nowadays, most people don't know more than two or three people on the block. So getting back to that community nature, at least within the members of the Committee of Safety, recreating that warm and comfortable community feeling that existed around you is part of the goal that would be an inducement for people that might otherwise not be interested in committees of safety. I guess a couple definitions are in order here. We often talk about militia, and when we talk about militia, we don't really distinguish the fact that there are two forms of militia. There's the militia mentioned in the Constitution, and every state statute has reference to the militia, and generally it will be either all males or all people between 18 and 45 or thereabouts are members of the militia. But that's the lowercase m. That's the fundamental right of self-defense. However, when they come together in an organized unit, not to be confused with organized militia, which is the National Guard and the disorganized militia, but when they come together in an organized unit, or say a county unit, that's an uppercase militia, because it's a group now. It's not, they're both singular, one singular and one's plural. The militia group is the group assembled. the lowercase is singular. It's each right of each individual. Committee of Safety is the same thing, because as I went through these, I was confused when I was reading a lot of the minutes of the Albany Committee of Safety and their use of the term Committee of Safety. And as I read other books, I ran into the same thing. And I realized that at least on the county level down, though I don't find it on the state level, though we're using it in Arizona, is the Committee of Safety is two things. One is the General Association. That's everybody who has subscribed. It could be 100, 500, 1,000 people. Then there's the Committee of Safety, which is the executive board, which is the one selected to represent or act as the executive for that General Association. So even though they're both uppercase, in this case, Committee of Safety can mean the General Association or the Executive Board. And you need to keep that in mind, and when you're reading anything, understand which one is being talked about in what you're reading. There is an article on General Associations in that package in the zip file that I mentioned. So understanding these, now, my Skype name is Gary.HuntOPF, Oscar Papa Frank. That's for Outpost of Freedom. Anybody is interested in starting a Committee of Safety, I'll be glad to help them as much as I can. I'll send them information. I'll talk with them. I'll Skype into a meeting. It doesn't matter. If you need me to call you, I will be glad to call you. Fortunately, I'm getting back at the phone company and don't have to pay for, except for the base bill, pay for phone calls, so I can call and talk with you whenever you need help. And some of the people listening I know have spent a few hours with me on the phone the last few days. I've bent their ears to the point that they just made an excuse to get off the phone. But I'll be glad to help anybody. So will Mike Fry, who will probably be the liaison designee from the Arizona Committee of Safety. The Patriot community is kind of interesting, too, and another aspect about the Committee of Safety that makes it more suitable than most other organizations. Militia, hey, pick up your rifles, go play in the woods. Tea Party, support a candidate. Everything's single-focused. The Committee of Safety, all of us have our abilities and skills, and mine seems to be studying committees of safety, and, you know, I can't sell things, but I can try and educate. Mike Fry, for example, he's a salesman. He's the one who put it together. Another guy named Randy Mack, who just started his radio show 2 minutes ago, I hope we didn't take too many of his listeners away, has been a good salesman for Committee of Safety. But the Committee of Safety, the beauty of it is you can find something in that you will enjoy doing. You might want to, be a historian and start recording the history of your Committee of Safety as it grows, keeping copies of all the documents, compiling a book for your posterity in case they ever need it again, because they didn't do a real good job 230 years ago of giving us a good record. There are so many things that have to be done, and if any two or three people come together and say, I think we need this, the General Association approves that subcommittee, they go out and do it. The only two things that cannot be done, it is not political. It does not recognize the existence of the government. Therefore, it cannot support candidates for office in that government. However, if there's somebody that's serving in a capacity in that government in your community or in your state or even on the federal level, now, campaigning for somebody is telling people a lie. It's telling them he's going to do this if you vote for him, and that's a lie, and we know it by now. If we don't, we ain't very smart. However, if he got elected and did do this, to say he did this, that despicable scum, that's different. That's not politics. That's reporting facts. So understand that the negative, I hate to put it that way, but the negative is fact. The positive is probably a lie. So there's no involvement in politics as a Committee of Safety. It doesn't preclude the members from participating in politics as long as they don't cross that line and say, I'm a member of the Arizona Committee of Safety and I support Joe Smith for senator. The other one is not an advocacy group. Any organization out there can support committees of safety. Committees of safety cannot support any group out there, because committee of safety is a government. It's not an organization. It's a government in itself. And you wouldn't want your government to support, say, Sons of Liberty Riders, but your government would appreciate it if Sons of Liberty Riders supported your government. So it's not an advocacy group, and it's not a political organization. That's a distinction that doesn't exist in any of the other organizations out there. They've got a purpose, and they go full steam ahead. Doesn't mean that you can't work in these areas on your own time, but it's not the task of the Committee of Safety. But the Committee of Safety has that platform in subcommittees where if you got an interest and you find what your niche is, let's just say logistics and supplies, that you feel this desperate need, you're a prepper, and you feel this desperate need to make sure that everybody in our Committee of Safety is going to have food and toilet paper, then you form a logistics and supply subcommittee and then start working on it. But then you expand that to include how are we going to supply the militia, how are we going to do this, how are we going to do that. So you can find your niche there, find what you're good at, and do it. So there's something for everybody in the Committee of Safety, even if it's just a little old lady wanting to get her house or her lawn mowed, or a little old man wanting to get his house painted. There's something for everybody. If you get enough members on the local level, this won't work on the state level, but in the county level, you get enough members and start incorporating little old ladies and little old men in there, you start looking for a committee, the house painting committee, the lawn mowing committee. Set them up where you're doing something for your community, building that community, making it stronger, making it cohesive, so when the shit hits the fan, you've got a cohesive community that can defend itself, it can feed itself, and it can take care of itself.
Wow, that sounds absolutely riveting. And I must say that, you know, there's also a couple other aspects, too, that I think people might be curious about. For example, how would different committees of safety interface with each other?
Well, we're all familiar with the concept of committee of correspondence. And actually, the Committee of Correspondence, I had thought for years it was an innovation of Sam Adams. It wasn't. It goes back to 1763 during the Stamp Act Congress. The first committees of correspondence were set up to share information about what they were going to do in dealing with the Stamp Act. You know, in those days, there was two means of communication. One was by courier, and the other one was face-to-face. Now we've got a variety of means of communication. So that's got to be developed. Now, there is, and Sleepy, you're familiar with this. We talked many months back about Committee of Digital Correspondence, which was intended to be set up as a news distribution organization network that would verify the news before it went out. And but it also would become an electronic structure and even a physical structure for communication network. Now, the communication committee will be working along this line. That stuff that we talked about that back then will go to them so that we can get an infrastructure in place by the time there are enough committees for that we have to start creating this communication. But you also have to understand that if war breaks out in this country, Arizona doesn't have to communicate with Virginia. It may have to communicate with New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, Utah, and California, the states that abut it. And so that's a consideration in communication. You have to have that local network as well as the broad one. The broad one is educational. The narrow one is emergency. But that's in the works. And now if there's anybody listening that's very good on computers, I've got an idea for a web page that would facilitate this. It's PHP, and PHP is kind of like Latin to me. I don't understand it. I understand barely understand HTML basic and reverse Polish notation in English. But if anybody wants to volunteer to help set up this network. I'll buy the domain, but we've got to set up the programming that allows it to exist. That's one thing we're looking for. It's a way of communicating back and forth betwixt us.
All right, and I think we should, at this point, open up to the various callers that the call-in number is area code 646-478-3229. That is 646-478-3229. One more time, area code 646-478-3229. Or you can alternatively sign into your Blog Talk Radio account, refresh the page, and click the Skype icon next to the call-in number and follow the on-screen instructions to call in and ask our guest, Gary Hunt, anything about committees of safety and how they work and all of those sundry good aspects. While we are waiting for people to call in, Gary, what is the relationship, the proper relationship between the militia units and their local committee of safety?
Well, there was a conversation going on somewhere on the internet the other day talking about militia, and somebody said, we don't have time to start a committee of safety. We should have done that in the past. Well, that's a good way to shrug off a responsibility. But my question back to him is, as the militia, is your job to protect the community? And he said, yes. And I said, does the community know that you're protecting them? I didn't get an answer. So it behooves the militias to go to their community and say, look, we're here for your defense, but we need a committee of safety to form. So, we'll get you in touch with the right people, but we need a committee of safety because we're really not a proper militia now. We just call ourselves that. But how can you defend somebody, protect somebody when they don't know you're protecting them? That's kind of an obscene thought if you think about it. Or at least I think it is.
All right. It looks like there might be a caller. Let's bring them on and see what they're up to. Area code 941, you are live with us. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right, what is your comment or question?
My question is for Mr. Hunt. If one were to decide that they wanted to start working on starting a committee of safety in their area, in the past 18 years that you've been doing this, what is the best approach for recruiting that you have seen?
I think that... Well, I've had that conversation with a few people, and surprisingly, Arizona created itself in a sense, just the conversation. But the first thing to do, and assuming in most cases we're going to start at the county level, you need to start talking with people. You need to lean over the back fence and talk to your neighbor. Find people of special interest or that might be interested in a committee of safety for any of these number of reasons that we've discussed. But then the next step, first you've got to find a place to meet and allow yourself enough time to get ready for that meeting. Some ideas, Denny's usually have, larger Denny's has a meeting room, usually available, no charge. The Orlando, we had 300 people show up at the Orlando Public Library for the first meeting committee of safety. We had retained about 30 by the time we got started, and I'm told the 10% retainage is pretty good. But what we also did is, we handed out flyers, but I think you can go further with flyers. You've got gun shops and camping stores, barber shops, convenience stores, and laundromats with bulletin boards, or that might put up a flyer in their window. And that's beginning to approach the people that might be interested in committee of safety. In Florida, Channel 2, WESH, actually did a spot on committees of safety before the meeting, and then they snuck a camera against the rules into the meeting. I guess they thought they had the right to since they supported us during the meeting, the first meeting of the committee of safety. But a number of local radio stations did some public service announcements about the Committee of Safety. So you contact any local, nowadays they've got a lot of public broadcast stations, TV stations, contact them and tell them you want to run a spot ad on there, and they'd probably be glad to do it. Contact the radio station, see if they'd run a public service ad for the Committee of Safety. Talk to, if you have some local talk hosts, call them up and talk to them, give them a brief explanation and see if they'd want to do a, you know, a 5-minute interview or something on Committee of Safety. Hey, they might want to do a longer one.
Right.
But the idea is to get the word out and get it out in plenty of time so that people can make the meeting and that you're all set for the meeting.
Okay. So once you have the people there, what do you do with the people who are nervous about how our government is going to react to committees of safety? What do you say to those people?
I've got something here that I think will answer that question. How does it read? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, we don't intend to petition the government for redress of grievances, and we're obviously not a religious organization, but the right of peaceable assembly, as long as all you're doing is creating an infrastructure and you're not talking about shooting anybody, but just being in a position to shoot should the need ever arise, what can be wrong with this? If we have degenerated to the point that we can't sit and plan, create a spare tire so we have one in our car, maybe we're too late, but I don't think we're too late. And I don't, I honestly do not believe that the government can come up with it. The most creative attorneys, this one that now is going to go after the drug manufacturer because the guy went in and shot 4 people when he wanted to steal the drugs from behind the pharmacy counter.
Right.
Even that attorney could probably not find a way to go after committees of safety. They are our heritage. Now, a question that arises often is the militias mentioned in the Constitution, but committees of safety aren't. Well, juries are mentioned in the Constitution. It doesn't explain that they have the right to judge both fact and law. Grand juries are mentioned, and it doesn't point out that they should not be subordinate to the U.S. attorney or the state attorney or the county attorney, which they are. But there were a lot. They made it clear that these aren't all the rights the people retain. But in their minds then, the Committee of Safety was so significant in the creation of this country that they didn't feel a need. It was understood. Why do we need to mention Committee of Safety when we know it exists? It created this great nation we now have. So inherently and fundamentally, it's there because nothing would have existed. We would not be the United States of America if it were not for Committees of Safety. So if you think any attorney can attack that or any law enforcement officer can undermine that aspect of this nation, I don't think they can, quite frankly. And so if it does occur, I'll travel out there and help you fight them over your right to assemble peaceably and prepare your spare tire.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hunt.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for that call. And let's see, I think continuing on while we're still waiting for calls, what do you think should be the types of skills that people who are in a committee of safety should have, like their skill sets?
The skill sets you need for the committee of safety, participation in the committee of safety, is the same skill set that everybody listening to this program has, and that's your skill set. You can find a place in the Committee of Safety where you use what you do best to benefit the entire community. That's the entire purpose. Let's make this our community. And as I mentioned earlier, you see a need, you talk to a few other people, create that subcommittee and start pursuing that need as long as it's not advocacy and as long as it's not political. The skill sets, caring about your community. If you're very good with words, you might want to be the secretary or the public relations officer. In Arizona, there's a public relations officer, for example, who is the official spokesman for the Committee of Safety. If you're good on the Internet, communications. Now, communications can broaden to web page and and other information dissemination of internet information on the internet. If your only skill set is pushing a lawnmower, they've got a job for you in the Committee of Safety, because I'm sure there's some little old ladies that need their lawn mowed. So any skill set, you just have to find where you fit into it. And I'm sure if you start meeting with the Committee of Safety and talking with the people there, you'll find a place where your skill set will fit and benefit the Committee of Safety and yourself as well.
All right. It also looks like we have another caller, area code 575. Go ahead, caller. You are live on the air.
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight? Thanks for doing the show. I'm actually up in Tipton County, Tennessee, and this is Pony Boy, and we're looking to start a Committee of Safety. I've been helping out militias. I was down in Texas for about a year. I've been kind of looking over Gary's stuff. Anyway, I moved. I'm in a new town, and we had a meeting last week, and we decided to go with Committee of Safety. And what we're looking at is kind of, now say if we have three or four people that are not in our rural town, but they're in existing towns around us, and they want to help us get it started. However, I know about the board and stuff like that, and if we start ours in our town, I know they can play a role, but to what extent and what can their functions be that they're not in our township?
Do you have counties there?
Yeah, we have Tipton County, and then obviously the sub-towns.
Are they in Tipton County?
No, they would be in the same county.
They are in the same county?
Yeah, we got Covington, Brighton, Millington, so they're all in Tipton County. However, we want to start a functioning one in Covington, which would be our rural town.
Well, let's see. Arizona started a Committee of Safety because no other states had one, so they kind of picked their state to become the first one. Now, if you're in Covington, so if Covington starts a County Committee of Safety, Tipton County Committee of Safety, these people have every right. They're lawful inhabitants of Tipton County. So they have every right to join your Committee of Safety. Now, they'll learn from you. You'll help build with them. And at some point, you'll break off and you'll become the Covington and the Milford Committees of Safety that together then are the Tipton County Committee of Safety.
Okay, so you break off into your own town branches to make the whole county, Tipton County, Committee of Safety.
Right, and somebody I was speaking with, they're talking about crossing two county lines, so they're going to call it Lee and Chase County Committee of Safety, and then when they get big enough, they'll split to Lee County Committee of Safety and Chase County Committee of Safety. You can start at the bottom down at a town or a plantation, if there's any plantations left, and build up, or you can start in the middle and build down, and then also encourage building up. When you get two or three county committees of safety, you might consider forming a state committee of safety. Arizona is really going to be on the books when they have three counties participating on the executive board. Otherwise, they're just doing the planning now, but at that point, they've really formed themselves as a committee of safety. So you can start in the either end or the middle to build it.
Okay.
Cross county lines. There should be proximity. You can't have this county and then two counties over working together, but you could use all three together. You could have four counties together. You could call it Southwest Tennessee. I don't know where it is, but Southeast Tennessee Committee of Safety until you get large enough to break out. But the idea is when you get a working group, you create it, and then as it grows, and you're all helping each other make it grow, so it's going to grow faster than if just each one were trying independently. You're all working together, so you're going to get larger faster and be able to break off into more local communities.
Okay, thank you for that. One more question here. I heard you touch on the original 13th Amendment, and I'm wondering, what roles as far as police officers, lawyers, things like that, would you recommend, not recommend, or are you indifferent? Because theoretically they hold titles of nobility.
That's true, and when we set up the Central Florida Committee of Safety, it was very specific on the application as a subscriber. Are you in law enforcement, a banker, or an attorney? If so, you cannot join the Committee of Safety. They opted to go with the acceptance that the 13th Amendment was ratified, the Titles of Nobility Amendment. Arizona had discussed that, and they decided that they didn't want to do that. That's your choice. I can't recommend anything. You have two options. You can go this way or that way. I'm not your committee of safety. You're your committee of safety. I'm going to help you get there as much as I can, but if you believe everything I say to be true and do exactly what I say, you're not creating a committee of safety. You're creating a Gary Hunt fan club, and I don't want any fan clubs. So
right,
those
yeah.
decisions you have to make. Take what you've got. You don't like it. I'll give you a good example. Arizona, when I wrote up the bylaws, the proposed bylaws for them, I suggested that they elect five members of the General Association at the state level to become the executive board, and then every time a county came on, they would send one delegate, and he would go on the executive board, and so the executive board would build every time a county came on, but there would always be the five from the state level. They came up with a better idea. They said, we don't have anybody on the executive board right now except the chairman. And he has no vote except to break a tie. However, every county then will send two delegates up, and they will sit on the executive board. So in this case, everything is from the bottom up except the chairman. The chairman's selected at the state level. They may change that later when they get enough counties participating, but from a starting point, they had a hell of a lot better idea that was more modeled after history than what I had proposed. So don't take what I take as gospel. Take it as a guideline, and then whatever feels
yep.
comfortable with you is what you've got to do. Now, there's
okay.
one more question I'm going to answer for you because I know you've asked it before. Can a militia member be in the Committee of Safety? Yes. Can he be on the executive board? No, because then he's his own boss. But theoretically, every able-bodied male that was a member of the General Association should be in the militia as well, eventually. And every militia member should encourage his families and all his relatives and friends to be on the Committee of Safety. It's only the executive board, the ones that make decisions, that, and there was only one historical case that I can find in Agnes Hunt's book. She talks, I think it was South Carolina, this militia general, the commander of all the militia in South Carolina, insisted on being the committee on the Committee of Safety Executive Board, and they made exception for him because they figured he was just one vote and wouldn't be able to be his own boss in that respect. And that's the only case where I can ever find a militia officer was or a militia member was on the Committee of Safety. We know that George Washington left his position in the Continental Congress to become commander. We know that I can't think of his name right now, the guy in Worcester, Massachusetts, was the head of the Committee of Safety. When he started up the militia or joined the militia, he left his post as a member of the executive board, the Committee of Safety. So the separation should be there, the only one exception I found in history. But as far as participation is the General Association, the let's call it the lowercase Committee of Safety, any militia member can be a member of that, officers and otherwise. It's their community.
Okay. One more quick thing here, because I know it's been rumbling around us and talking. Say if the government should fail, as far as continuing the commerce and stuff like that coming in to our cities and towns, do you know how that would play out as far as still getting our goods and services?
So let's see. Have I thought about that? Now, this is unrelated to committees of safety. I guess I can post the link on the chat for those interested, though, if I can find the link for the chat.
Well, actually, we've got a whole deluge of questions that actually came in. So, Ponyboy, is there anything else you'd like to add very briefly?
No, just thanks. Keep up the great work, and appreciate all the hard work that's going into this.
Great, and thank you for your call. Definitely appreciate it. Okay,
to answer his question, though, the Committee of Safety within its Arizona is looking at retaining communication, transportation, and everything open, at least inside the horseshoe that I mentioned. They've taken that into consideration. The thought has occurred to me, and there's something that I call the Plan for Restoration of Constitutional Government that addresses that in more detail, and it becomes a function of the Committee of Safety at some point in time to do what they can to keep the national transportation, communication, production systems, oil, everything open. And so it is a broad responsibility that will require communications, keep the railroads running, keep everything running. That is necessary. So the Plan for Restoration of Constitutional Government at that length will begin to explain it. The more detailed plan goes into even more detail in explaining what's necessary to make sure that your job is to keep the community functional, and that's you're going to need toilet paper and groceries. Groceries can perhaps be handled locally, but toilet paper, most places aren't set up to make toilet paper and don't have enough corn cobs. So it becomes something that has to be considered when the time comes.
Right, of course. And actually, I should just kind of mention to the listeners that we are just past the half-hour mark, and literally we're getting questions through various different communications mediums, like by the minute. So we'll try and get through it as much as possible. So to the next one, there was the question of, given the fact that we already pay our taxes to the government, how would a local Committee of Safety be funded?
Well, creative funding, I guess, one thing, but I'm going to give you an example. The first two or three meetings of the Arizona Committee of Safety, I guess some money was made in contributions, but I took an old Nord Davis trick. I said, put up a jar and say, donations, $1 if you can afford it. Well, they had 22 people at the last meeting, and $63 came in. And they've done comparable. They've done $50, $60, $70 each meeting just in contributions. People go to the restaurant where they're meeting now and throw money in the jar. But there's a Ways and Means Committee, too, that needs to start looking at that, because if the committee decides to assess the General Association a tax, the people are going to, unless it's a very low tax, they're probably going to leave the general, they're going to resign. They're going to get out of the General Association. But then back to the plan, that anticipates that when it gets significant, there are other means of funding, and they're addressed in the plan. But going back historically, one of the documents I ran across, or a few of the documents I ran across, were these committees of safety determining what the day rate of pay was for militia members in active service. Now, we're not anticipating active service yet, but when the shit hits the fan, there will be active service, and the methods of funding change at that point. And that's, as I say, it's explained in the plan. I don't want to go into it now. But in the meantime, it's volunteer, or they're going to raise some money off this gun shoot. Think of functions you can hold that will increase your membership, increase, you know, a camp out or anything that you can think of that will bring some money in. If it's $5 to camp, you charge them $8 or $10 or $15 to come to the Committee of Safety camp out. Is it a right gun shoot? You make sure that you make a little profit and you start saving your money and spending it where you have to, printing. We're using it to set up the Skype communications. But, that, you know, that's where you come in. You've got to decide how much money you need and how you're going to make it. So you need a Ways and Means Committee to develop ways of sustaining it, but you don't have to worry about paying the militia until they're in active service, and there's a solution at that time, too.
All right, on to the next question that we got. What are the limitations of a local committee of safety when it comes to supplementing obvious failures in the municipal government? For example, a broken municipal educational system, and then secondarily to that, can the local committee of safety, conceivably facilitate solutions for situations such as this?
Well, homeschooling is an alternative to public education. If you had a committee of safety that had enough people with children, they might establish a committee of safety homeschool where parents took turns teaching in their areas of concern. Set it up like the I just finished reading a very interesting book, Education in the United States from 1790 to 1850, and it's amazing how many types of schools existed, and none of them were like what we have today back then when education was getting off the ground. Many communities were willing to pay a tax to hire a school marm and build that little red schoolhouse that probably never existed because the schoolhouses were built on poor land that wasn't productive, near swamps and never painted. But you can set up you have a right to homeschool. You set up a collective homeschool to bypass that. What was the other part of the question? Second one?
Oh, yeah. Can the Committee of Safety conceivably facilitate solutions for situations such as this? And I think you just mentioned about, like what is known in homeschooling circles as a local homeschool co-op.
Yeah, well, they used to have in California when I lived in Santa Cruz, back in the 60s, they had a cooperative daycare, which was a kindergarten, nursery school, everything, you know. And it was participatory. There were a lot of students from the University of California, Santa Cruz, that actually came over and wanted to spend time helping educate these children. So they were getting school and daycare environment. So you do the same thing. It is a cooperative. Committee of Safety is a cooperative. I hate to use that term because it sounds communistic, but no, it's a cooperative. You're cooperating in achieving what you can based on your skill sets, your abilities, your means. So there's no problem that you can't solve.
All right, next question was, given that the Committee of Safety will be going to the sheriff for approval, does that mean they will be subordinate to the government it is working to replace?
I didn't know they were going to be going to the sheriff for approval.
I think I'm reading this right. Yeah, I think that's what the question
was. I think that's perhaps an assumption. Now, what I mentioned very early on about the procedure that we're going to go through to establish a truly constitutional militia, doesn't necessarily address it. Each state is different on their structure within their constitution. Remember, we're trying to restore constitutional government, so you have to look at your constitution and see what the constitution says the head of the county is, or the statutory laws if it's passed on to that responsibility. But let's look at it this way. Worcester, Massachusetts, they were obedient to Governor Hutchinson and to the county. It was called a general court at the time, but it wasn't a court. The court was actually the legislative body. The general court was. The court was the court. The general court was the legislative body. So they were obedient to the Governor Hutchinson and this general court. Well, they forced the justices in the general court to resign, and they told Hutchinson to take a flying leap into Boston Harbor. And they established courts and re-established the militia, re-enrolled the militia, recommissioned the officers, leaving the Tories out. So at some point in time, regardless of whether you recognize the sheriff in that chain of command or not, if the sheriff ever turns against the Constitution, you do what Worcester, Massachusetts did and say, go jump in Boston Harbor. And now you're down the Committee of Safety.
All right. Anthony Smith 3 in the chat room asks, what if your constitutional sheriff is unconstitutional?
I think I just answered that. But until the militias go active, I mean, the militias can train. You can't stop the militias from training. Now, when the militias arm their firelocks and get ready to pull the trigger, that's a whole different story. So the training has nothing to do with the marching orders. And there's the term that was used in the Agnes Hunt's book, marching orders. The marching orders came from the Committee of Safety. There's no marching orders until that sheriff is either on your side or not on your side. And so the committee might say, march against that sheriff, arrest him, put him in jail, and we'll elect a sheriff under the authority of the Committee of Safety because we have taken over this town. Now, if you read the simplified version of the plan, it talks about white dots. Little white dots pop up, they start getting bigger, they begin merging. That's black is tyranny, white is constitutional government. And that's exactly what happened 230 years ago. These little white dots popped up. First one at Lexington, second one at Concord. Then around Concord, little white dots popped up, and they started moving towards Concord, and they started joining together, and pretty soon they covered both sides of the road all the way back to Boston. And that black thread was just a line down the middle like a snake with his tail curling up behind it. That's exactly what happened then. That's what will happen now when he's unconstitutional, and you've determined that, and it's time to charge the firelock. Then it's time to tell that sheriff he's unconstitutional, and you don't recognize him any more than you recognize the justices that were kicked out of the general court in Worcester, Massachusetts.
All right. There is also another question about how can a local committee of safety recruit good quality personnel?
By knocking on doors, by going to laundromats and convenience stores, camping stores, gun shops, local television and radio stations, most importantly, you know, I use Katrina in the introduction to committees of safety, but if you live in Iowa, so these areas that flood occasionally from the Mississippi, how long does it take FEMA to get there? You know, look at your community and see what the needs are and play on those needs of your community and make that one of the focuses of what your committee of safety is going to do until it's needed as a spare tire.
All right. And we also do have a caller with us, area code 941. You are live with us on the air. Welcome.
Good evening, Gary. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I apologize. The question concerning the sheriff was mine in the chat, and I worded it poorly, and I think that left Sleepy kind of twisting in the wind there. That wasn't his fault. That was mine.
Hey, that's a good place for Sleepy to be.
I guess it's a two-part question. I did hear you say earlier that an individual or at least a group of individuals are placing information or compiling information for a standard training manual to be approved by certain sheriffs, such as Paul Bavieu. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's their intention. You know, I can't, from what I've heard, now, well, they haven't finalized the plans, but I understand that they've already talked with Bavieu about him recognizing them, and until the manual's done and they work out a lot of details, I wouldn't call it a done deal.
Right, roger that. Now, Do they intend for Sheriff Bavieu or any of his deputies to participate in any of the training, providing a training or providing training ground for militia, as far as you know?
As far as I know, they haven't talked about that yet. They've got to get the manual first. You know, I'm trying to get them to focus, encourage them to focus on one thing, get it done before they broaden out, because how can they go talk to Bavieu unless they've already determined this is what we're going to do. This is our program now. Can we sit down and talk with you about how we can interface with your department as far as protection on the border?
Okay. All right.
So there's an old saying, cart before the horse, and there's another one that I like with cart attached, horse to follow.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess what I was confused about was exactly what role he would play, you know, as their I'm sure they have some idea of what role they would like the sheriff to play if they're going to him for his approval.
Well, I think that what they're looking at now, I think I can answer that one. What they're looking at now is if the problem is bad enough on the border and they decide once there's a constitutional militia and it's gone through this training and they decide that they'd like to go help, they're not going to be working for the sheriff. They're going to be working in his jurisdiction. And they want his permission to work within his jurisdiction, and they want him to respond when they've gathered a bunch of illegals or whatever happens. Now, Arizona's got an interesting situation right now because there's the bill, 1083, before the legislature right now, that would provide funding for these militia, perhaps, and that's to be worked out, and we're working with some of the legislatures on that. But it would also allow them to have some of the proceeds of any confiscations.
Okay. Now, well, that would be wonderful. Now, as you know, I mean, militias or separate groups of armed and semi-trained men are already on the border and are operating in these counties with full cooperation from Border Patrol, Bureau of Land Management, Rangers, and the Sheriff's Department.
That's so true, and that's not what we're looking for is a recognized relationship with them. So we become the seal of approval and the Committee of Safety, and if they acknowledge this militia is trained, that's good enough. Then they'll contact the sheriff and say we're going to be working in this area. It's not going to be much different than what's happening now,
okay.
Except the procedure will be through the Arizona Committee of Safety and start building cohesiveness within that organization.
All right. Well, then the final part of my confusion here is, on one hand, you have a Committee of Safety organized, structured, yet cannot recognize the existing government, and on the other, working with a sheriff who is a member of that very government. So I don't understand how that will. I mean, if you could clear that up for me, I'd.
Well, they're not going to be working under his direction. They're just going to be blessed with his permission to enter his territory. And true, it begins to stretch the imagination a little bit, but if you think back to colonial times, I'm sure that there were sheriffs or officials in a lot of the counties in western Massachusetts that were sympathetic to the Whig cause. We know that was in New York as well. And so they worked with them until the SHTF Day, April 19th, and then it was, okay, now put up or shut up. Are you going to be with us or against us? Now, we're not at that day yet, and so until that day comes, a little cooperation in protection of the community. Let's just say there's a flood. We're going to fill sandbags, and the Army Corps of Engineers is filling sandbags. Can we not work with them?
This is more or less to prevent or smooth over any possible adversarial relationships between militia and the Sheriff's Department.
That's basically what we're doing is making it a cooperative effort of protection of the community.
All right, very good. Thank you for your patience with my questions, and you put out some great information tonight.
Well, thanks for the questions. I think you probably helped. It was clear in my mind, I think, but I hope it's clearer in other people's minds now because of you asking them.
Well, you know me. You have to put it simple for me, Gary, or I won't get it.
I won't use any big words.
Great, and thank you very much, caller. We do appreciate it. And again, for people listening, if you want to call in, the number is area code 646-478-3229. Again, that is area code 646-478-3229, where you can sign into your Blog Talk Radio account, refresh the page, and click the Skype icon next to the call-in number and follow the on-screen instructions. And alternatively, you can also just type your questions into the chat, and we will try and read those as we go along. We have a little bit, actually exactly 13 minutes left, so let's also look at a couple other aspects. So, Gary, the concept of a local committee of safety, is it really, what are its constituent parts? Is it really one part or two parts, or how does that all hang together?
Well, it's the two parts in structure, the General Association and the Executive Board, but it's multiple parts, and each subcommittee is looking at a different area of interest for the Committee of Safety. So it's a coordinated, structured organization that is looking up, down, left, right, ahead, and back for what needs to be done to prepare that infrastructure should the need ever arise to use the infrastructure, if I understood your question.
Yes, because I believe that, if one goes through the material, there's the concept of the executive board of the Committee of Safety, and then there's also the General Association. So I guess some clarity about how all those relationships hang together would be good.
General Association right now in Arizona, for example, is modifying the bylaws. They're dealing with disciplinary problems. They're setting up the gun shoots, they're setting up the militia subcommittees, creating the infrastructure. These are administrative functions. They're not necessarily executive. The executive function is to put those into operation. The executive board won't have a whole lot to do until the day comes that they become the executive for the Arizona Committees of Safety, and the spare tire is going on the wheel right now. But the marching orders have to come from the executive committee. The means of marching, the structure, the infrastructure is created by the General Association, and as the executive board comes into place, there'll be the final approval on everything. But I'm sure that they'll recognize the work and effort, and unless they've got good ideas, will accept what's submitted to them by the General Association and the subcommittees. But when it comes to operational, when it's time to charge the firelock, the executive committee now becomes, in essence, the governor of Arizona. Now, back to Agnes Hunt's book, there were a number of colonies where the governor of who was the royal governor opted for the Whig side and worked hand in hand with the Committee of Safety. But in every colony, there was a Committee of Safety. In four or five colonies, there was also a governor working with the Committee of Safety as the executive for that colony. And so we're looking at the same thing. I can't say that I expect that Jan Brewer would ever get to the point that she would say, screw the federal government. But if she did, then she would work with the Committee of Safety, because the Committee of Safety has created the new government. But they're recognizing the stature of the existing governor, because the governor opted to our side. That would be true in the town, in the county, and the state level, that if the existing government goes with the Committee of Safety, the Committee of Safety is the structure, but they welcome the participation because it's going to bring membership, it's going to bring compliance to the Committee of Safety.
All right. And do the local committees of safety, when they are established, do they then need to also set up like brick-and-mortar common law courts at this time?
No, common law courts and charging the firelocks both require enforcement. There's force involved. That's the last resort of government is to use force. But both of them have to exist after SHTF Day. And now SHTF Day is a variable. It's going to vary. It's not going to be one day necessarily. For example, Worcester, Massachusetts, I believe it was in May of 1774, 11 months, maybe it was September or somewhere in that range. It was in 1774 that they declared independence from Great Britain. There were 90 declarations of independence before Thomas Jefferson put pen to paper. So a lot of people declared independence. Their SHTF Day came and went. And at that point, when they rejected the British government and declared independence from it, that is when they began setting up the courts and telling the militia to charge the firelocks.
Now, as far as the skill set goes for people that, more specifically about that, for example, should people learn how parliamentary procedure works in order to run meetings? I mean, we've seen how other like activist organizations and others have tried different, different ways of attempting to run a meeting. Some of them kind of devolve into more speakers' forums. And if a committee of safety is to actually enact decisions and actually get things done, wouldn't it behoove them to actually learn how to run a meeting just in case they don't? Because I don't think a lot of activists of any kind have really been taught what's needed to just even run a simple meeting. So should they learn something like Robert's Rules of Order or parliamentary procedure, or how about just common law?
Well, the last meeting in the Arizona Committee of Safety, Robert's Rules of Order was called in. It's written in the bylaws. It can be superseded by the committee. But it was called in at one point. The parliamentarian is assigned with enforcing Robert's Rules of Order, the sergeant at arms. If they were larger and somebody came in with specific knowledge of good working knowledge of Roberts, I think the recommendation would be that they separate the parliamentarian and the sergeant at arms positions and create the parliamentarian to keep it in order. But the meetings have run fairly orderly. Committee reports have to be in writing. for example. So you don't get some guy rambling, we did this and that, and we talked about this and that. They have to put it down in writing. And when you do that, you know, nobody wants to write a whole lot of words, so they write relatively short reports. And so the efforts are being made to make it an organized meeting, but they're learning as they go as well. But, yes, the larger it gets, especially, the more important it becomes that somebody well-versed in Robert's Rules of Order or whatever form of meeting conduct you choose to adopt, Robert's being the most common, that you adopt that and abide by it if it starts creating a problem by being a little less formal.
All right, and we are getting down to our last 5 minutes or so. So, Gary Hunt, how can people get in contact with you or read some of your material? Where should they go to find out more about what you're all about?
Well, my email address is hunt@outpost-of-freedom.com. And you can email me anytime. My Skype name is Gary.HuntOPF. This after the dot, HuntOPF, all one word. Oscar Papa Frank. Skype me. Once we're in touch, I'll do everything I can to assist you in whatever I can do to assist you in getting a committee of safety going. I've spent hours on the phone with people, and I'm more than willing to, if it serves the purpose of getting a committee of safety going, my availability is unlimited. It might be restricted by other constraints like radio shows or something like that, but I'll make myself available to talk with you. I'll Skype into meetings if you have the means. A laptop computer is all it takes. In fact, CECOM, a wonderful organization, I Skyped into their meeting in Georgia, and I Skyped into a meeting in Orlando to explain committees of safety, and it worked quite well. They got a big screen and plugged a laptop into it, set a microphone up, people asked questions, and I'll be glad to do that with anybody. I've done it with the Arizona Committee of Safety, and just get in touch with me.
Right, and I believe you also have a website dedicated to this subject, which I believe should be committee.org.
Committee.org.
Yes.
No, I don't know if you still need to put the www in front of it or not. You know, they keep changing things on the internet, but it's www.committee, committe.org. And there you can find what the Arizona Committee of Safety has up now by going down to the bottom. There's a tic-tac-toe matrix down there, and on the left side it says, is there a committee of safety near you? If you click that, it'll go to a list of all the states. Any state that has a committee of safety currently, you can click that and it'll show you in Arizona, it goes to the Arizona Committee of Safety, and in Georgia it goes to a page that shows the two committees of safety they've got established there. Generally along these lines, those were established last year, and they haven't had the benefit of what we've done with Arizona. But also on that first page, committee.org, scroll down just a little bit, and you'll see information about the Committee of Safety in a zip file. If you download that file, you'll have enough to keep you busy reading for quite some time, depending on how deep you want to go into it. But the information is there, and you'll need that. If you call me, if you've got that in front of you, I can refer you to perhaps to the document that will answer your questions in hopefully in sufficient detail.
So maybe people should download that zip file, burn it to like a blank CD, and hand it out at various other like Patriot gatherings and that kind of thing to try and then bring awareness to how committees of safety can be set up.
Well, they could, and some people have done that, but also download it and then take the documents and make them appropriate to your committee of safety, to your area, to your county, your state, whatever you're doing. For example, I don't think I have the proposed bylaws in there yet, but they're on the Arizona page, and I will get them in the zip file. But if you pass out all this information to somebody that's a layperson, they're going to look at all these files in there and see how big some are. And it's too big to email. You know, the zip is too big to email. So you need to take what you think is most suited to, for your approach to starting the Committee of Safety, and just get that out. They don't want to read the volumes from the 90s about the Committee of Safety and the historical references. They might not give a darn about the missing 13th Amendment. So, you know, information overloads a consideration. You'll
right.
have the information. You decide what you want, what you think people need to see.
Right. And Gary Hunt, thank you very much for being on with us tonight.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
All right, folks. That was our guest, Gary Hunt, and this has been Pro Action. The next broadcast of Pro Action should be next Tuesday. I believe that is February the 21st, where we will examine some other options for organizing people and for looking at real solutions. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.